my observations have been the health and safety professionals within an organization can allow an organization to, or support an organization to mature, or they can stop it from maturing.
Welcome to the Safety Podcast with your host, all the way from a small green island in the wild Atlantic Ocean, Richard Collins.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Welcome to the Safety Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Collins. Thank you for joining us. I'm delighted to bring Anna Keane, founder of Acre Frameworks, onto the show for a short series of podcasts where we're going to discuss her last 3 years of work. In the first part of these three podcasts, we're going to look firstly at the evolution of HSE, the context of what we were, who we are now, and where Anna thinks we're going following all the research that she's done. That's going to lead us in really nicely to the second part and set us up to look at how we can challenge for change within our careers and within our organizations. Anna's going to dissect what she has seen in terms of what is actually stopping us from pushing our development forward and how we can change it. The last of this series of podcasts is going to look at then how we can identify when it's a good time to move on from our roles or from the organizations that we're in. And also Anna's going to give us some tips on how we can actually find the perfect match for us personally. Before we move on to our conversation with Anna, I want to give a very big thank you out to the sponsor for this mini-series, which is AyresWeb. AyresWeb, if you haven't heard of them, have been recently recognized once again as one of the top global EHS software providers by independent research firm Verdantix. Their latest product, Ava, is designed with a fresh, clean, and intuitive user interface, which is supported by some of the most advanced architecture in the market, providing your organization with a flexible foundation for the future. When the team at AyresWeb showed me around the Ava platform, one of the big things that stood out for me was the simplicity. A key focus for the development of the platform is that two clicks will get you anywhere in the system. That's my kind of software. They're building a system that puts the user experience at the heart of the development. And of course, that makes our jobs easier and allows both ourselves and other users to minimize admin time and focus on adding value elsewhere. If you're interested in seeing what EHS software could do for you and you would like to hear more about AyresWeb's Ava system, I'll drop a link on the podcast page for you to go directly through, or of course you can also visit AyresWeb.com for more in-depth information or to request a demo of the platform. Thanks again to AyresWeb for supporting the Safety Podcast. Okay then, it's time for us to go and join the first part of our discussion with Anna Keane from Acre Frameworks. Anna Keane, thank you very much for coming on the show. We're very excited to have you here, and I'm looking forward to picking your brain on all this research you've been doing about us.
No, thank you for having me. Really looking forward to getting stuck into some of the topics we've been discussing offline. So, no, appreciate it.
As I know, and some of our listeners may or may not know, Acre Frameworks was born a few years ago, and you're sort of the driver and driving force behind it. For those listening that aren't aware of who you are and what you guys do, are you able to give us a little bit of an overview and a bit of a history as to what you're doing and where you're headed?
Yeah, absolutely. So if I start off just sort of explaining a bit about my background, I spent the first 12-13 years of my career recruiting. So a bit like health and safety, sometimes recruiters get a bad reputation, and I spent years working mainly in construction recruitment but always in health and safety. And then after 8 years working for a company in the UK, moved over to Sydney in Australia for a while, and again found myself back in recruitment over there in health and safety, probably more at an exec level, and actually began to see a real change in the requirements we were getting from clients. So when I first started out, it was all very, very simple. Find someone with an EBOSH or a technical qualification that could, you know, shout loudly and tell other people what to do. And more and more so that was changing to a skill set around enabling or advising, coaching, engaging with business. And for me as a recruiter, the job was getting more complex. It wasn't as straight cut as tick a box around a qualification. Actually, you know, we were meeting people with the right qualifications, the right membership levels, but actually didn't have any of this skill set. So when I came back to the UK, well, God, 4 years ago now, I decided to take a step away from recruitment and actually set up what's now called Frameworks, Acre Frameworks, all around supporting the development of non-technical competencies or skills in the health and safety professions. So we're very much focused on supporting individuals and teams to make the changes at a personal level in their behaviours that allows them to be more effective in role. So I'm a real believer that you can be competent, but actually in order to be effective, you need to really hone practice, and through support and development, actually, you know, focus on skills that people call in, you know, soft skills, but actually I think they're some of the hardest to learn and develop. So we purely focus on enabling health and safety professionals to develop the non-technical aspect of their role. So not as an alternative, and I think sometimes, you know, not as an alternative to technical development, but alongside, you know, develop your technical, gain your experience, but we really focus on the element which is the non-technical element.
As you know, on the Safety Podcast here, it's all about helping other professionals and trying to, you know, enable us to push ourselves forward and realise our potential. So it's a really good fit for our listeners. I'm sure a lot of people will be interested to hear much more about what you're doing. One thing that piques my interest is how was it for you sort of bringing these concepts of those new skills into the UK market? How was that received?
Really, really well, to be honest. I came back and I wasn't actually partnering with Acre at the time. That came slightly later. And I started reaching out to people, not necessarily in my network, from my previous recruitment life, but actually outside of it. And I found very quickly that when you picked up the phone to people and you asked them about, you know, what were the challenges they were seeing in recruiting or developing people around the non-technical, they really got quite engaged. It was actually that there'd been a need in market to address this problem, this issue, for some time. And a number of the senior leaders I worked with to create the framework in its first formation were actually people that, you know, were really passionate about this evolving skill set of the safety profession and really addressing what had been a gap in not just the skill sets of their team, but actually in, you know, the candidate pool when they were recruiting, and also what they saw to be actually a key driver in changing the way the profession is viewed internally and externally and within organisations, but actually, you know, the brand of the profession as a whole, I suppose.
Yeah, so, I remember seeing the video you created about the perception of the public as regards health and safety in general, and that was very much a not surprising response from most of them. And I actually have used that question just to, you know, to get a feel for the crowd that I'm talking to and training and stuff, and they get very much the same response. But it's quite a good icebreaker, I think.
Yeah, and we used that. So we went onto the streets of London and we asked the great British public what they thought when they heard the term health and safety. And as you've you sort of alluded to, it wasn't the most polite. It was a lot around clipboards and rules and you can't do this and you can't do that. And for me, that was really a way of actually saying, you know, this isn't just coming from me. This is coming from the people that engage with this on a daily basis. So whatever environment you now work in, health and safety comes into contact, whether that's your first day induction or if you're in construction or a high risk environment every day. And I think it's saying, actually, if this is the brand and the perception of health and safety, you're immediately dealing with barriers. So actually, how do we change this profession to be one that people are genuinely proud to be in, that people want to and aspire to join? And, you know, that's a big passion about mine. How do you create role models in this that people in universities or pre-university actually think health and safety is a career of choice for me? And we wanted to get the message across that actually, without looking and doing some self-reflection on our own behaviours as a profession, we couldn't change any of that. So I'm a true believer that this profession is really focused on changing the behaviours of others. Actually, our job is to support them to do some reflection on their own behaviours and how they might be affecting, you know, health and safety and the impacts of the work they do. So it was a fun bit of work. I'd like to say we'd edited it. We didn't. And I would love to go back on to the streets in a few years' time and ask the same questions and hear a really positive story about what people think of health and safety. And a lot of the work we are trying to do at the moment is actually to push those positive stories. So let's not talk about fines. Let's talk about positive engagement. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a real challenge for this profession as a whole, is to find the positives in the work they do, because quite often they do their best work when things go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even now, many of the popular media, you know, production streams that produce health and safety related content, you know, do focus on things like prosecutions, mm-hmm. because they seemingly still get eyeballs, and unfortunately that is the draw of negative press and negative stories. It sort of goes back to, you know, the whole history of everything being based upon fear, which we've discussed previously in some podcasts, that we have to change that, you know, that narrative. The work you're doing, the aspiration to change the public perception of the profession, is really admirable, I think, and it's a, you know, a really tough challenge. With that in mind, have you taken your inspiration from your experiences elsewhere in the likes of Australia?
I think what I really enjoyed about Australia, for example, was actually they didn't have the traditions we have in health and safety. So they almost didn't have that heritage that in some ways limits us moving forward in the UK. So actually, for them, it was a lot easier to look at innovation, actually to challenge, if they were taking, you know, UK practice, to challenge, actually, is this fit for purpose? Is there a different way of doing it? And we've mm-hmm. seen movements come out of Australia, things like Safety Differently, which, whether you agree with it or not, actually in principle is a lot of the work we do enables people to have skills to lead with a Safety Differently approach. But for me, it's actually what I witnessed there was much more about giving people permission to challenge, to be curious and to question, was the way that other countries have always done it actually the best way for them? And that there was something quite refreshing about that. And I think maybe it's the Aussie UK rivalry of actually, we don't want to do what just because the UK have done it, but actually I think there was something in that drove them to look at things slightly differently. And I think that sometimes is that curiosity, I'm sure we'll discuss quite a lot around that, but that curiosity is for me really critical to the evolution of this profession.
Okay, yeah, we'll come on to that again in the next session, the curiosity bit. So We'll save that for some detail later on. In terms of the UK market then in particular, I know lots of our listeners are in the UK listening to what their gripes are and their difficulties. You've done a huge amount of research via Acre Frameworks into roles within health, safety, environment and sustainability and so on. Can you see any major changes happening in the last few years in terms of the skills being demanded directly from employers? Can you give us any sort of insight into what you're seeing?
Yeah, we definitely, I think the first thing to mention is, you know, what I alluded to right at the beginning around when I started working in health and safety, it was very much enforcement. People were called officers. It was about control, constrain, compliance, and I do think that is, although there will always be an element of some of those things in the role, I do think more and more so organisations are stepping away from that. When I set the frameworks set the framework 3 years ago, we were very much focused on a lot of the skill sets were around influencing and developing sales techniques into health and safety professionals. So getting them to, you know, to be more persuasive, for example, to consult wider with the business, but very much focused on influencing other people's. And I think what's more so, we've just done the biggest bit of research that I'm aware of to date. We've just done structured interviews with 95 heads of or global heads of. And interestingly, a lot of the competencies that are coming out are real changes. So we're talking a lot more around being enablers. We're talking about being facilitators. We're talking around a lot around innovation, things like bravery, empathy. And I think as the introduction of well-being comes more into, or even health comes more into health and safety, actually a lot of these skills are becoming more and more prominent or required in order for people to be effective. We're also seeing things like consultation not being around consulting with someone to get them to agree to the way you want them to do something. So it's not just a tick box in a change management program. It's actually consulting with people for their genuine thoughts, for their ideas, for their insight. And I think that's been a big change in terms of where we've gone over the last 3 years, is actually much more so becoming this facilitator, this enabler, this you know, person that really listens, deep dives, asks great questions, rather than someone that asks questions to get someone to their outcome, their goal, if that makes sense. And I think that is a big change we're seeing in people. So if I take something like coaching, for example, back in the past, you wouldn't have coached someone, you'd just have told them what to do. 3 years ago, we were probably talking more about coaching to where you're coaching to get the outcome you want. So this is the way you should be doing it. I will coach you to get to that way. Now we're supporting people to develop skills around coaching that are much more focused on sort of non-directive coaching. So where you are just asking good questions and getting much more curious. So I think as time goes on, all three elements will be needed in the role, but someone's ability to adapt across that three and evolve this additional skill set is actually really, really essential.
So yes, Anna, there's been lots of talk about coaching becoming an enabler rather than a barrier to change as an HSC professional. Do you have any views on how organizations and individuals can actually get to a point where, you know, they have these skills and they can actually implement, you know, what is being asked for here?
No, absolutely. I think first and foremost, it's been really clear about what the role is within an organization. So every organization is different. It has its different challenges. It's at different points in the maturity scale. However, you know, it's about understanding what does good look like in the organization that you're in at the moment and in the role that you're doing, and what does success look like in that role? So I think, you know, leaders need to really be clear with their people around what the expectation in terms of their behaviours are. I think there's been little discussion about that between, you know, individuals. If you look at job specs, and I spent most of my life looking at job specs, it's a lot about roles and responsibilities, very little around sort of behaviours or expectations. And I think so having clarity for the individual is really important. And then actually identifying, you know, where the individual sits in terms of their behaviours versus where they need to be, and supporting and giving people permission to identify those gaps, but in a way that they can do it, where they can, you know, be vulnerable about that rather than feeling like it's a weakness. One of the big things in this profession is actually your technical competence has actually deemed you credible for years. And when you're enabling and facilitating, you're not having the answers. So you're not, you know, you're taking away the comfort blanket, I suppose. You know, if someone rings you and asks you, what should I do about this? Your technical knowledge for years has been the thing that's actually allowed you to answer that question, or your experience has been. What we're challenging people to do is actually step back and go, actually, you know, what's the right question to ask here? And that change in skill set for the leaders we work for requires the individuals in their teams to be really supported. So safe environments to practice that, opportunities to reflect on what went well, what didn't, because it will feel very different from the normal conversations they've had. And that's why people talk about enabling and facilitating, but so rarely do you see these things in practice, is because actually over people's careers they've been conditioned to give the answer or to have the knowledge to be that subject matter expert. And what we're asking them to do is actually is to still have that knowledge, but think about how you use it and how you can get the other person to grow rather than just coming straight with the answer. So I think for me, it's for the leaders that, you know, we've worked with for building the framework, it's a lot around how you set that expectation, how you identify the gaps, and then how you support people to step outside of their comfort zones and do something quite different. And we'll get into that, I think, in the second session. But for me, those three things are really important for any leader to encourage that change to happen with their people.
I think for a lot of people, that will be a seismic shift in how they approach things. Can you just remind us of those three main elements once again, Anna?
Yeah, setting clear expectations. So what does success look like in that role at that time? And then identifying, you know, where that individual is and where their gaps are, and then supporting them to make the change. I think, you know, we see so much in the last 3 years. I've spent time, you know, we've worked with 1,500 people in 20 countries. I've had some really insightful conversations with people around, you know, what does success look like in their job? Is it ordering the PPE? Is it getting the skips emptied? You know, or, and when we're challenging them to go and have a conversation with someone, that's not on their to-do list for the day. So they can't quite quantify how that's leading to success. So a lot of the time we're giving people permission or we're working with people to try something a bit different. And that can be really challenging. It can be really uncomfortable the first few times. But actually, that's how I truly believe we get to a place where, you can be a bit influencer and, you know, much more focused on being a facilitator enabler, or you can adapt between your styles, but you've got all of those things in your toolkit.
I think you've touched on one of the huge hurdles for people in this space when they're trying to progress. And I'm sure a lot of folks will relate to what you're saying there, and actually the challenge of overcoming that. Taking that and linking that back to what you were saying about what organizations are actually asking for and expecting in the first place. Is it more difficult from your experience to change the organization or the individual?
So someone might shoot me down for having this opinion, but I actually believe and I haven't done some research, and maybe one day I'll go and there's a PhD in it for someone, but I actually believe that the behaviors of the people in the safety function have a big impact on where the organization sits in terms of immaturity. And I actually think that my observations have been that people that the health and safety professionals within an organization can allow an organization to, or support an organization to mature, or they can stop it from maturing. So things like interdependence can't happen where you have safety professionals giving answers and, you know, controlling and constraining. So it's chicken and egg. Is it easier to, I think it's easier to change the individuals that can then make the change in the larger organization. It really depends on, you know, wider complexities like the leadership of the organization, what they believe good health and safety looks like, or what good work looks like and how health and safety fits into that. But I think it's we very much focus on looking at an individual level and then a combination of how that builds into a team and then their influence on the rest of the organization.
That's a good answer.
I think I went around the houses on that, but you know, that's okay.
No, I mean, I think from certainly from my perspective, it's it's sort of key to throw the ball back in the court of the professional. And I'm sure a lot of people listening, and we've all been guilty of it at times, you know, blaming our own situation on whoever we're working for, and not actually trying to drive enough change, within ourselves and through what we're doing. So I think that's what you're alluding to there. And, it's an important thing to hear.
Yeah. And I think that's the question we're asking people to challenge themselves with constantly is, you know, what can I do differently? If, you know, I've heard it all, but, you know, if that idiot, for example, is not doing the right thing on site, what are we doing differently to actually change them? Because actually, you know, does anyone come to work to hurt themselves? I don't believe they do. So therefore, how are you setting them up for success? What could you be doing differently to have a different conversation with them that enables them to do things? It's take that control and that power back as an individual and actually look at what could you be doing differently. And then take that responsibility.
Yeah, I think it's a good message and a good motivating thing to think about for folks and to look at what they're doing and think about what they can change. Actually, leading off from that, Anna, and something we talked about before as well is that, and something I want to ask you is, how does this tie in with the ever expanding role of people that are in health and safety or environment have started, you know, with one of those specialisms and they've had to take on either or as well as their initial responsibilities, as well as quality and sustainability or facilities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do you think this ties into that whole progression and maturity of your own skills?
Yeah, I think it's a really challenging one. I think it emphasises, you know, the work we're doing to promote non-technical development, because actually as you become less of a subject matter expert, as you become more diverse in the support services you're offering an organisation, the more important the non-technical element is. So, you know, the ability to drive change through others will be as relevant in safety as it will be in environment, in quality, in sustainability. So I think it is making the skill set that we focus on and we talk about even more critical. I think also it's challenging people around what reason they actually came into the profession in the first place. So if safety was their core driver, actually to then be working in health, safety, environment, quality, sustainability, CR, all added onto that security, actually does it dilute their purpose? And I think that for some people is really challenging and conflicting as well. We see in environment, especially people join it because they actually want to make impact. In the people study environmental management degrees, and actually then to be pulled into safety is actually not appealing. So I think there is a limitation to it. I understand why organisations do it. I actually think if you get good change management in place, and actually when you look at work or you know, the greater culture and organisation, it actually makes sense to align some of these things up. I think it just has to be a fine balance between giving people the right skill sets, the right expectations around their role. So you can't be a subject matter expert in all of those areas. So we often work with clients to create matrices where they'll have an E specialist and a Q specialist supporting people that are actually driving the change within an organization. So I think as the role becomes more diverse, I think what we focus on is actually going to give people the skill sets to influence, to drive change, to innovate across all of those letters, for want of a better term, or all those areas. And that's really critical for organisations to be able to deliver on all of them, or else what we'll see is what we've always seen, you know, very small H, huge S, tiny E, depends on what they do, actually, whether the Q even comes into it. They tend to be afterthoughts. And I think, you know, the way a team structures and the way that they support their team members to take all of that on is much about the development of their non-technical as it is about their technical skills.
That's an interesting insight for me, and I'm sure for others. And I'm sure we're going to come on to, in this set of sessions of podcasts, we're going to, in the third session, look at changing between organizations and moving to and from different roles. So hopefully we can come back to that and get into a little bit more of the detail around it and how people can actually proactively ask the right questions to, you know, to see if a role is the right fit for them. So we'll look forward to that.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting topic, and one we're discussing more and more so is actually how do you pick the right job rather than pick right candidates. So yeah, looking forward to that.
yeah. I look forward to getting on that with you. So thank you for the introduction to what you do today and your insights into the evolution of health, safety and environment and everything else that goes along with it nowadays. It's been interesting to hear your thoughts on the non-technical aspects of the profession and how that's becoming a more and more important area of expertise for us. So thanks for coming on. I'm really looking forward to getting into the next podcast with you, Anna, which is going to look at challenging for change, how we can become more curious to make changes and progress in our individual careers. So thanks again, and hopefully we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks.
Okay, that wraps up the first of our three podcasts with Anna Keane from Acre Frameworks. I hope you enjoyed that introduction to what it is that Anna and her team do. Be sure to join us for the second part of this series, where we look at the biggest challenges for people in the profession, the non-technical skills that we need to develop to push forward, and we'll take a look at what stops us from moving forward and how we can change it. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your day to listen in. If you found this podcast valuable, please make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any of our podcasts coming up in the near future. And of course, if you have a few seconds spare, please feel free to leave us a review or rate us on iTunes or whichever platform you're listening on. And all being well, hopefully we'll catch you for the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Safety Podcast. We would love you to tell us which episode you would like to hear. Don't forget to give us a shout at safetypodcast.com.